Are you truly stepping into the role of leader in your own life the way you know you're meant to? What shifts would unlock your full potential? It's time to explore those answers with the host of Sacred Leadership, intuitive business coach, Charisse Alexander.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to today's episode of Sacred Leadership with Charisse. My name, of course, is Charisse here on the Inspire Choices Network, and I am joined today by Brad Henderson, where we will be talking about why great leaders take responsibility. In today's conversation, I'm sitting down with Brad to explore one of the great paradoxes of leadership, why the most powerful leaders are often the first to take responsibility when things go wrong. Brad unpacks how owning the blame without shame, ego, or self-protection can actually unlock higher trust, deeper accountability, and extraordinary team performance. Together, we will talk about reframing failure and creating psychologically safe environments and the courage it takes to say, "This is on me," even when it isn't entirely your fault. Brad is a leadership coach and author of The Consistency Effect, How to Turn Reliable Actions into Remarkable Success. He believes that leadership is too important to be left to chance. Within every leader lies an extraordinary capacity for impact, often waiting for the right catalyst. Brad's own early isolated journey of leadership without guidance and the profound awakening coaching brought him has ignited his desire to be that catalyst. So again, thank you, Brad, for joining me here today and welcome. I know I didn't tell your whole story in that 30 seconds, so I will turn it over to you where you can tell us more about yourself, your journey, what that catalyst was. Welcome.
Awesome. And thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure. I guess 45 years of successive and progressive leadership roles has given me some great insights into people and into managing. I've had the pleasure of working in 7 different industries, probably 14 or 15 different roles. So I've seen a wide variety of different situations and scenarios, and moving from industry to industry, you jump onto the steepest edge of the learning curve, because moving from one company to another in the same industry, a lot of it's the same. Moving different industries, you're always in a learning mode, and I guess maybe that's what the passion for making those changes created inside me. So throughout all of that, I always saw that leadership was the highest calling of anyone in that role, and helping specifically help others to learn and develop and become the best versions of themselves. So it was a natural progression for me at this stage in my career to say, I'm going to give up the big job. I'm going to move now to trying to help the next generation of leaders, help them on their journey, help them to go through things that I went through. It took me entirely too long. Hopefully help them to go through those things faster and at least to make those same distinctions for themselves.
I love that. So you talked about moving from industry to industry. Can you maybe share with us some of the industries that you've passed through and taught your leadership skills to?
Sure. I started my career in commercial real estate, and it's really where I sort of coming of age, if you like. It was a very much a mailroom story. I started as a summer student and eventually worked my way up to running the division that I was the summer student at over a period of time. And the people that were in commercial real estate, the principal number of employees were all 100% commissioned salespeople. Mm-hmm. And so you learned at a very early age that it is not a command and control structure. It is very much an influence with some authority, but for the most part, you're trying to convince people to do the right thing for reasons that are mutually beneficial to them and to the organization. So I think that really that early career and that early learning served me extremely well, because as I moved to other companies like telecommunications and IT, where it was more of a command and control structure, I still exercise it as a way of convincing people to do things for compelling reasons, theirs and mine, as opposed to just dictating ends and results. So I worked also in advanced manufacturing. I've also now become an author. an executive leadership coach, worked in business process outsourcing, worked domestically and abroad. So a very wide range of experiences.
Yes, it sounds like it. And thank you for sharing that. I'm curious. I think if I recall, you were in the real estate industry for about 15, 16 years. Is that right?
That's correct.
What a great industry. I formerly come from real estate. So
okay, there you go. Small world.
lots of fun. Now, one of the things you talk about in this leadership paradox is taking the blame. So when we say that, what does that mean to you? And where did you really realize how powerful it is as leaders to really step up and like take accountability and ownership?
When I left real estate, I joined a comparatively small IT company, and we helped to develop that company, to turn it into a performer, but we sold it to a giant telecommunications company. So as I went from the larger real estate company to a small IT company back to a large company, it was very familiar terrain in terms of hierarchies and political relationships that needed to be dealt with. But this was really my first experience with a command and control kind of environment where it actually occurred to the people that worked for you that they worked for you and that wasn't the reverse. And so one of the things I was given was a number of underperforming divisions to turn around because they saw my skills and capabilities as being able to do that. And as I got involved with these organizations, one of the things I learned was that people knew what to do, but they didn't do what they knew. And I always found that very curious. And I said, well, you know, gee, like what you're telling me we should be doing makes complete sense to me. And why don't we just move forward with it? And they would tell me about all of these challenges about, well, what if we're wrong? And this is definitely a career limiting move if it doesn't work out. And, you know, there's so many people that are going to be negative about it if we move forward. And, you know, it's just better to stick with the safe, the tried and the trivial. And I said, OK, well, look, I'll tell you what. Why don't we do the things that you think we need to do? And if they don't work out, I will take 100% of the blame. But if they do work out, you guys can take 100% of the credit. And they looked at me like I had three heads, because they wanted to believe me. But by the same token, this is not what is typical in a large bureaucratic organization. But over time, we did try things, and some of them didn't work out. And it was quite easy for me to just say, look, we tried this. It didn't work out. And, you know, it's completely my fault. It was my call to make it. And what they found was the higher levels in the organization said, hey, that's wrong. Don't do it again. But nothing terribly consequential happened as a result.
They moved on.
So then moving on, we did do some things that worked out. And rather than me taking the credit for it, I said, well, you know, I'm so lucky to have such a great team. They did this, they did that. And, you know, here's how it all worked out. So their confidence and their trust in me increased significantly, but more importantly, their confidence and their trust in their own judgment increased to the point where they went on to make decisions on their own. They didn't need that air cover, if you like, of someone helping them to or taking the blame when things didn't go well. So it was a great lesson in being a confidence coach. In terms of having more confidence in someone than they actually have in themselves, to prime the pump, help them get to that level where they have that same level of confidence. And then the last thing I'll say, because I'm a big believer in this, is that I said, okay, now that you have seen how this works, how can you cascade it down into the organization, to the people that work for you? How can you develop that trust with them? How can you be their confidence coach?
I love that. You know, we do the same thing in our organization, because I will say to our people, like, hey, I want you to make mistakes. I mean, I don't want you to make mistakes, but it's part of learning. And I welcome you to make mistakes because if you're 25, I don't actually expect that you know everything, right? But I still see the resistance that you're talking about in terms of like that. I don't really believe that you're going to take responsibility. And so what I've tried to do instead is actively take responsibility when, in fact, it happened today. I was on a meeting this morning and I said, that's my fault. That error that happened, that's mine. I'm owning it publicly with the idea that this would also invite other people to own when they make a decision and it maybe doesn't go so well. So when you work with executives and leaders, do you find that they're resistant to this idea or that it's a really tough sell for them?
It's a cultural thing, and it's interesting that in very large organizations, there's a very old expression. It's a Greek expression. It's that the fish stinks from the head, and the way that I like that metaphor is that if you look at an organization and if you think that it's dysfunctional, keep going up the ladder to see whose behavior is being modeled by the rest of the organization. Because rarely do you have a highly engaged, emotionally intelligent leader where further down into their organization, there is different behaviors. It is usually being modeled all the way up and down the organization. So if you do not address it at the highest level, you're not going to be able to get it to happen at a lower levels down. So to be more specific, if I'm coaching a senior executive who is not in charge and the environment that that senior executive deals with is highly toxic, it is very difficult for them to single-handedly turn around the environment in which they live, because it's like a gladiator sport where people come to the executive leadership teams to be berated and to be taken task because somewhere along the line the leader feels that that's the way that they get results. Compare and contrast that with an organization where you have very emotionally intelligent leaders at the senior levels. If they see that that's happening further down in their organization, it behooves them to take action. It inspires them to take action to either coach that person or potentially coach that person out of the organization, because it's like a disease, and it will spread. And unfortunately, it will probably spread down rather than up.
So with that in mind then, I have said this to some clients where it's where my observation has been, you're constantly fighting with your employees to do the right thing, as you talked about. But if you can take a step back and really observe the dynamic of what's going on, you can see that what's being modeled in, we'll say, lower level staff or junior staff is really what's being pushed down from the top. And so the analogy that I gave is like, the saying of your outer world is a reflection of your inner world. The way that I like to say it in the workplace is what is happening in your organization is a reflection of what's going on with leadership. And do you think, or have you found that when you're talking to leaders and explaining this connection to them, do they grasp that very quickly, that the behaviors and the way that their staff are showing up are actually a reflection of how not, and I don't mean that in that shame and blame way. If you can't see it, you don't know it. But do you find that it's fairly easy to get them to see that connection without spiraling into defensiveness?
I there's a whole lot to unpack there. So the short answer to your question is sometimes. And the reason why I use that is that not everybody is coachable, or at least not everybody is coachable right now. And so in order for you to have an effect in, in your practice and your coaching, you need to build a relationship and build some trust first, before people will be their authentic self. And so the early parts of the discussion can't address the most sensitive, issues. They need to start with some safe ground where the two people can develop a relationship. But eventually, if the relationship matures in the right way, and if the person who is being coached is open to being their authentic self in the coaching sessions, recognizing that it's a very secure session, that it is not discussed beyond the walls or the confines of the video conference, then you can actually have some impact. And I've had some major breakthroughs where leaders have been wrapped up in a paradigm where push, 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 blame, 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 being critical rather than looking for praise has been how they have achieved success in the past. And so that's their framework. And in order to help them evolve in that framework, you need to be able to show them the adverse effects that that is having in their organization and how they may approach it in a slightly different way and get either the same results or better results, but have better and more functional relationships along the way, right? So hopefully that wasn't too much of a rambling conversation, but certainly how you get to that is not a straight path, and it's not anyone who wants instant success is not going to find it.
Indeed. We are actually going to pick this back up because I want to talk about this in, under the context of cultural differences, because I think it's important to bring up here. But we are going to take our first commercial break. So we will be right back here today with Brad Henderson.
Awesome.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, you'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
Are you a subject matter expert? Are you here to share your expertise with an audience waiting to hear from you in only the way you can deliver? Are you ready to have your voice amplified across the airwaves? Inspired Choices Network has a global radio platform streaming to millions of people across the world. Professionally produced and supported by an accomplished team every step of the way, you can broadcast from anywhere in the world, knowing your voice matters, and we ensure it is delivered with ease and efficiency. Eager to hear your message, the world awaits. Contact us today to become an Inspired Choices Network radio host. Email becomeahost@inspiredchoicesnetwork.com.
This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to Charisse@pavitraleadership.com. Now back to the program.
Thank you, and welcome back to Sacred Leadership with Charisse here on the Inspired Choices Network, where I am joined by Brad Henderson, where we are discussing the leadership paradox, where taking the blame can actually help unlock performance. In the first segment, I was chatting with Brad, and we were talking about how important it is in terms of perhaps building trust with employees and folks that you're working with in the willingness as a leader to accept responsibility and begin to provide that or build that self-confidence within colleagues and subordinates so that they can feel a sense of confidence in terms of the willingness to take a chance and maybe learn. So right before the break, Brad, you were talking about or I had posed the question around, when you have a leader who might not see the connection between leading one way and what the resulting output of that is. And the question that I wanted to ask you, or I wanted to, because you did mention in all of your experience that you've worked not only domestically, but internationally as well. So how does this play out in those environments where it might be more, I don't even know the word to use here, but I'll say old school, where it's like, command and do as I say, not as I do kind of scenario. How does that play out, and what does that look like in other environments? And if you don't mind sharing, where else have you worked?
Sure. Based on your question, the situation, the thought that comes to mind is that I was in charge of international operations for a business process outsourcing firm. So somebody that outsourced everything from contact centers to accounting, all kinds of different business processes. And like many organizations, we had a considerable staff in the Philippines. As I visited the Philippines, there was absolutely no question that there was very much a pyramid command and control, that people at successively lower levels feared for their job. And their job was more important than most of the people in North America, because a very impoverished country, contact center jobs, very, very important. So when I would travel, when I would visit, and I would talk about empowerment, I would talk about leaders taking responsibility for their people and being admitting when they were wrong. It was a very very unusual talk. And remember that English is not always their first language, and so you have to be very careful in how you choose your words and make sure that your meaning is coming across. But they, again, probably more challenging than a lot of people in North America, because they don't necessarily have that perspective, that history of those kinds of environments. And so, like everything else, it is consistent. If you're being consistent and you do it over a large period of time, eventually people will develop the trust. Eventually, they will come to believe that what you're doing. And the effect was much more powerful. And I talk about discretionary effort a lot with leaders and employees. And that is that if you ask somebody to do something and they don't want to do it, they can give you 100 different reasons why they're too busy, it's not their job, whatever else. But if you ask them to do something and they really want to do it, oh my goodness, do they ever find the extra time to be able to do it? And that is discretionary effort. So it's at their discretion that they choose to do that. If you can inspire people and develop their trust, and you can impassion them with what it is that you want to do and tap into that discretionary effort, all of a sudden your 40-hour a week employees are working 50, 60 hours a week, because they're doing it because they want to do it. They're tapping into their discretionary effort. Under a command and control kind of environment, not only are you not tapping into that discretionary effort, if anything, you're probably shutting it down, because they're not going to do something unless they're told to do it. They're going to fear the consequences of doing something outside of coloring in the lines, for fear that there are going to be negative repercussions. And so that environment is actually absolutely not conducive, to tapping into discretionary effort.
I have never heard that terminology, but I love it. Discretionary effort, because and I think it's ultimately what every leader of every organization wants is how do I motivate people to, or inspire them, or help them find their path, whatever it is, but to get them to do what I need them to do and then some, right? Because that's really what we want. We don't just want the bare minimum. We want more as leaders, but I've never heard it called discretionary effort. So I guess that's where this consistency effect comes in. Tell us more about the consistency effect.
Well, when I was asked to describe my experience in business, I would always revert to a baseball metaphor, and I would always say that I would hit singles and doubles, right? Not somebody who hit grand slam home runs, and that how my success was built over numerous companies, multiple different industries, was showing up every day and doing the right things. Now, doing the right things doesn't mean doing the same thing every day, but it means trying to be consistent in doing the right things every day, and watching the results compound over time, because only after months, years, in some cases decades, do you see the results of this effort to build trust, to tap into discretionary effort, to have people have more confidence in making decisions on their own, to have leaders being inspiring as opposed to command and control. And let me give you an example. I had a client just recently where we had a fairly significant breakthrough, and his success had always been built on push, 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 tell people what to do, be the person with all the answers. And I had built the trust with him enough to say, do you not see, because he would say, I tell them what to do, I'm clear, but they still don't always do what I ask them to do.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, can we try something just as an experiment? And he says, okay, what? And I said, rather than telling them, let's ask questions. Let's let our questions be the guide to help them come to their own conclusions and see what happens. So he said, that sounds to me like a luxury of time I cannot afford. And I said, well,
said every great leader.
Yes, humor me, and let's just try that as an experiment. And I said, look, it can be anything. It could be in your social group. He was very involved in a church. I said, try that in your business, in your company, whatever you feel safe. The next meeting, he came back and he said, I have to tell you, it was quite profound. I said, well, tell me. He said, my first experiment was with my daughter, my teenage daughter. And rather than having a conversation with her where I would tell her what was on my mind, I asked her questions and was genuinely interested in her answers. And I resisted the temptation to tell her anything. And the proof came later that day when my wife said, what was the conversation that you had with our daughter? Because she said it was the best and most meaningful conversation that she's ever had with you.
Wow.
So fortunately, that was the first, right? Because that was such a powerful and emotional anchor for him that it inspired him to go on and do more. So he was a small company, their startup, they're raising money, had the opportunity to meet with a venture capital company shortly after that. And rather than doing what he normally would do, which is pitch his business, he asked the company questions. He asked the leader questions to the point where at the end of the conversation, the leader said, this is the best conversation I've had in a long time. Why don't you come to my country club and let's discuss how this business can move forward? All right. So last test for him, right? Because these were, and the reason why I'm telling you this, not only is it true, but it's like a powerful model. The last test was with his employees, and they wanted to make all kinds of changes to their service delivery model. And my client said, have you spoken to any of our clients? And it just stopped them in their tracks. And they said, no, we haven't. And we're going to do that right away. That's what he wanted to tell them to do, right? But the question is what helped them to come to that conclusion. So needless to say, he is now a convert and has become the architect of solutions and conviction, because these, when they decide for themselves, they're more convicted.
Absolutely.
Rather than being the person that has all the answers.
But a follow-up to that, because I am also somebody who believes strongly in asking questions, both of oneself and even if you are in a mentoring, coaching type of relationship with someone. And kids are always a great example. They come to you, they want to vent, and you try to give them advice. They throw up resistance, but instead you ask them questions and they go away feeling very solidified in whatever information you gave them. But the question, and where I want to come with this, is in the work environment, he asked his staff if they asked any of the clients. But I think the key here for the leader is to remember, don't go on with that. Pause. Allow
Absolutely.
The silence. Allow them to come to the answer themselves, because instinctively, I could see a leader going, well, if you didn't ask the clients, don't you think you should? kind of thing. So it's really important, I think, to make sure that you allow the pause for them to come to that conclusion on their own.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the times when my clients, I'm sure your clients are the same, come to you and they say, hey, I'm struggling with this. And they're looking for the answer, right? They're looking for you to give the answer, me to give the answer. And I will hopefully not frustrate them, but I will ask questions. Mm-hmm. So, well, what information is missing? And then a lot of the times what I'll ask is, what are the three things that you want to surface in that other person's consciousness? And what are the three questions that will help them to reveal how they feel about that, those three issues, right? And once they get that model, then it becomes easier for them to move forward. Because a client just emailed me over the weekend and said, hey, I'm having a problem with my employees. This is what I'm going to do. And it was exactly that same model. And of course, I just said, I think that's awesome. You know, nothing to add. Which is what you want. You know, I don't want them to be dependent on me. I don't want them. I'm sure you don't want them to be dependent on you. We're trying to help them to build the skills and capabilities that are going to serve them going forward.
Man, it's almost like you like read all the questions I wrote down, because that's going to segue quite nicely into what I want to talk about what next, which is the ego and identity. So we are going to take our next commercial break, and we will come back to talk about ego, identity, and inner discipline and how it ties into all of what we're talking about. We'll be right back.
Awesome.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, you'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
How wonderful would it be to carry your favorite Inspired Choices Network host with you throughout your day? Well, now you can. Inspired Choices Network now has its very own mobile app. Our free app offers live streaming shows, along with thousands of podcasts and TV episodes. Our shows cover a wide variety of topics. Whether you're waking up with us, carrying us through the day, and taking us to bed with you, we're always here for you to enjoy. We're easy to find. Just search for Inspired Choices Network in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store.
This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. You can also send an email to Charisse@PavitraLeadership.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome, welcome. Oh, I love it. Hey, I was totally thinking that. I'm like, oh, I really love my music. I never want to change it.
Great vibe.
So welcome back.
Calm but inspiring, just like
it is, isn't it? First time I heard it, I fell in love with it, and I've never regretted it. I love it. Yeah. So thank you for commenting on my music. I do also love it. So sorry, now that we're done talking about my music, welcome back to Sacred Leadership with Charisse here on the Inspired Choices Network, where I am joined by Brad Henderson, and we are talking about the leadership paradox and how, as leaders, taking responsibility can really help unlock performance. And just before the break, Brad and I were talking about consistency in action and how important it is, and also asking really great juicy questions and allowing the pause so that your people can come up with the answer themselves, which will be far more effective than telling them what to do. But right before the break, Brad, you were talking about wanting to build confidence within employees and people that we are leading so that they are not so dependent on us. And it occurs to me that and I'm positive you've heard this before, it's not an uncommon thing, but it's virtually impossible to scale a business if every single person in the organization is relying on one or two leaders at the top to be able to make decisions. And when you've said that, it occurred to me that maybe part of the reason why some leaders might keep themselves stuck is maybe tied to their ego and identity and the desired, whether or not they admit it, but their resistance to actually letting go of that control and allowing people to stand on their own and become a leader because of what they feel like it might say about themselves. Thoughts on that?
Totally.
You're right. Okay.
So again, lots to unpack there. Let's just think about, you know, how people get into leadership roles in the first place. Generally, what we do as businesses is we take people that are great doers, and we think these people are awesome. We should put them in charge of people. And invariably, and I'm being dramatic to try and make the point, we give them very little, if any, leadership training. And so they do what they do best, which is that they tell other people how to do their job. Mm-hmm. And that creates a passive dependent relationship. And to add insult to injury, if people that work for them do something different and it doesn't work out, they will typically come down on them like a ton of bricks, tell them exactly why that wouldn't work, tell them exactly what they would have done as the superstar doer. Somebody learns during that process, which is that if I want to get along, I got to go along. And so I am just going to ask Charisse or whoever my boss is to tell me what to do. And then that way I won't be wrong. Right. So, yeah. Now what happens is that if by some chance that person becomes successful, they, not the leader, they get pushed up the ranks. Now, instead of being the subject matter expert in one area, they're now in charge of a multifaceted, multidimensional, multidisciplined organization. And it is virtually impossible for them to be the subject matter expert in all of these domains. So if they came from sales, now they got to be the subject matter expert in marketing, you know, diversity and equity and inclusion, finance, you know, et cetera, all the way along the line. And they don't, but they still try to be the person with all the answers as opposed to being the architect of great questions. Mm-hmm. And so in the clients that I have, and as they work up the ranks, I ask them the question, do you think that you are going to be able to be the subject matter expert in all of these areas? And in a moment of absolute honesty, they will say no. And I said, well, then why are you going to try to pretend to be? How is that going to work out for you? How is it going to work out for you when the people that work for you know 100 times more detail about what it is that you're talking about? And don't you see that asking brilliant questions is the way for you to not only get information from them, but also to pressure test their thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody, you know, if I come to you and I say to you, Charisse, this is what I think we should do. And you say, well, you know, I would do it this way. I'm going to learn something. I'm going to say, okay, well, she has her own way of doing it. If she says, well, Brad, have you thought of this? Or, you know, tell me about what your thinking is about that. I'm going to explain it to you. And two things are going to happen. Either it's going to make sense to you and you're going to say that's a good idea and keep going, or I'm going to listen to the words coming out of my mouth and go, that doesn't make sense at all. And, you know, you're right, Charisse, and I should be doing something different. Or you're going to ask more questions and I'm hopefully going to come to that conclusion myself. So, you know, the answer to your question is that, you know, you said, is it about identity and is it about ego? And the answer is absolutely, but it's for the wrong reasons. It's associating that I'm the person with all the answers, and that's a comfortable environment for me, and that's consistent with my understanding of who I am, versus I don't have all the answers, but I've got brilliant questions, and that's what makes me a brilliant leader. If you can see yourself in that second model, you'll shed the identity of the first model.
So then what occurs to me, and you make a really great point around asking brilliant questions, how do people begin to have confidence with that? Because it seems really straightforward. You know, just ask really great questions. And I say it all the time on this podcast. Ask really good questions. Ask really good questions. But if you're not used to asking questions of yourself or even using it as a tool, because that's really what it is. Asking questions is a tool that you use to, we'll say, guide and lead people or even yourself. So if you're not good at that, how do you begin to learn to ask good questions? It seems really simple, but I don't think it is.
Well, let me ask you a question. First time you did a podcast, were you any good at it?
No, I mean, I'd like to say I was amazing, but no, I was scared and terrified, and you could hear the fear in my voice.
Okay, and compared to today, what's the difference?
Well, I've done it enough times now that there I know that there's nothing to be terrified of.
And this, it's the same thing with learning about questions.
Yeah.
Right? And it you know, whatever people do, the first time they did it, they were never good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. If they were, it's more in their mind than in reality. And over time, and this is what, you know, this is what why coaching is so great. It's what you do is so important, because it isn't a once and for all kind of environment. It has to be over a repeated amount of time. Mm-hmm. Habits don't develop over a short period of time. They happen over a longer period of time. And consistency is doing the right things repeatedly and watching the results compound. And the other thing that I like to try and make a distinction is that sometimes people rely on sheer willpower to try and be consistent. And that's not as powerful as seeing consistency as being a ritual or as being a calling. And mm-hmm. and the difference between the first and the second is willpower is more discretionary. It's more about, I need to do this. It's more of an intellectual argument. The ritual part or the calling part is more about your raison d'etre, your reason for being. And mm-hmm. if you elevate something to your reason to being, it will be a much more powerful driver of consistency.
And you know, I think just about everybody wants consistency. And when you're, I guess, coaching a leader into adopting this type of way of being, I suppose, with the consistency around, you know, being accountable and being willing to take responsibility and showing that you can be fallible and human and all of these things. I imagine that there are sometimes some misstep. So what are some of the tips and tricks or comments that you have around, because we're talking about consistency, but there could be a, you know, a regression or one of these types of things, and how important it is to still be able to handle that well so that you can continue to build trust with the people around you.
It's a great question. It was one of the things that actually nagged me while I was writing the book, because as I was writing the book and I'm talking about consistency, it seemed to be something that everybody knew, but not everybody practiced. Mm-hmm. And why was that? So more research into it uncovered that there are actually a large number of obstacles to being consistent. Some of them are psychological, some of them are cultural, and some of them are sort of systemic or structural. So let's just start with the psychological one. The reason why people are in love with new initiatives is because it's a dopamine hit. It's like, this is the new thing and we're going to do this and it's going to be exciting. And the leaders are all excited about it and everybody's all excited. And so this gets launched. But how many times have you worked in a, doesn't matter if it's a big, small or medium sized company, and 3 months later, everybody goes, whatever happened to that initiative? Whatever happened to that brand new thing that we were going to do? Well, it lost steam because some other dopamine hit came up. Mm-hmm. And took its place. The second one, I'll call it cultural. and I ask leaders this. I said, who gets rewarded more? Somebody who came in at the last minute and saved a project that was going south, or the person who prevented the project from going south in the first place?
Mm. Usually the person who comes in the end.
Right. So guess what? Culturally, we're rewarding people that wait until things are all screwed up, or if you want to be completely sort of cynical about it, is actually cause things to screw up so that they can come in and save the day at the end of the at the end of the period, versus the person who consistently, methodically did all the right things, prevented the forest fire from the first at the first place. The last thing is systems, because if you recognize that there are these forces that are pushing us off being consistent, then there are systems that can help us to get back on online or to stay online. And that is recognizing this dopamine hit and recognizing that if you're going to have a long-term project, you need to have multiple dopamine hits along the way on that project, or you're going to get derailed. The cultural thing is making sure that your systems aren't set up to reward the wrong behavior. And lastly is, when was the last time somebody had a session to celebrate consistency?
So true. Everybody wants it and we never ever celebrate it. And if you think about it, it's like, we're going to celebrate this person for being boring and steady and consistent, because really that's what I hear. But so important, right? And I find that when I look at it in our environment, I'm sure you've seen this many times over, we have meetings, we do exactly what you said. We talk about the initiatives, what's the plan, and then come the next meeting, it's like, okay, what are we doing? So one thing I've started doing is like, and so good on you to recognize the need for the dopamine hit, because I would have never thought of that. You need to celebrate the milestones along the way instead of just, because then yes, you will lose excitement and said initiative will lose steam. And I've seen it time and time and time again. So thank you for the reminder and the awareness on that. It'll certainly keep me locked in on making sure we're rewarding consistency. We are going to take another break now, but when we come back, we are going to talk about culture, performance, and legacy. We will be right back.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, you'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to charisse@pavitraleadership.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back to Sacred Leadership with Charisse here on the Inspired Choices Network, where I am joined by Brad Henderson, and we are talking about the leadership paradox, how taking responsibility or taking blame can unlock true performance. So today, Brad and I have been going over all of the things that as leaders will really help to unlock performance within our organizations and the people that we are surrounded by, if we can learn how to take accountability, ownership, and responsibility. So I guess you would say then that consistency, because one of the questions I'd asked you is the how you manage the consistency, because, you know, when we say, okay, take blame, you're going to build trust, but then you have that one-off where you don't take blame and maybe revert to previous patterns of behavior. You're going to expect that that's going to happen, especially if we're learning a new behavior. So how does the leader then still honor themselves within that process and say, like, it's okay, I'm learning, it's okay, I can do this again next time, so that we can really remain humble within the experience? Because I also think that that's part of this, right, in the trust building, is if you don't handle it correctly in that moment or in the way that you desire when you're consciously doing this, then how do we make sure that we can come back to that and still make sure that we're, you know, showing up?
It's a great question. And I really think it comes down to what people's beliefs are about how they want to show up for their organization. And if you ask a leader, so if you're wrong and you tell all of your people that, how does that make you feel? And if the answer is, it makes me feel weak, I don't feel like I'm in charge, I don't feel like I'm worthy of leading, then those are unempowering beliefs or disempowering beliefs that are going to encourage them not to say those things, even when they are true. And maybe they've got points of reference that reinforce that belief. But if you can help them replace that belief with a stronger belief, which is that being authentic and being honest with your employees and showing them some fallibility is actually a sign of strength, and it will actually improve how other people see you. Rather than diminish how other people see you, you'll replace that belief with a much more informed, a much more enlightened leader who can be in front of their organization and can be their authentic self.
And I think that's, and with what you just said, I guess the most important part within that is that the leader has to be willing to be honest with themselves, right? That in that moment, if someone is, you know, if I take responsibility for something that's not my fault or that is my fault or whatever the case may be, that I begin to, and that's why I've said here today that it's so important that we don't get pulled into this self-shame, self-judgment, like it's okay, you're learning, this is new. So they got to be willing to be honest with themselves around how they're feeling in that moment for being wrong or making a bad decision or whatever the case may be. From your experience, you know, somebody, I mean, I guess you've said you've shown or you've talked about a lot of examples, your executive that had the conversation with their daughter and then ultimately and now he's been converted and he believes so strongly in all of this. What's the long-term cultural cost when leaders are perhaps extremely intelligent, but they can't become consistent in modeling this vulnerability, humility, etc.? You're on mute, Brad.
Sorry about that.
Oh, totally okay.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think a leader's failure to address a cultural challenge in their organization is the same as probably even more important than addressing any other problem in the organization. And usually it's about people not doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. That's the issue, and the leader is just not wanting to deal with it. They don't want to be the bad guy. They don't want to have the tough conversations with the other person in the organization who is adversely affecting the culture. And I don't use this term lightly, but it's a cancer in the organization. Mm-hmm. And if left unaddressed, it is just going to spread throughout the organization and have bad consequences. And if you're worried about being fallible in front of your people and having them think badly about it, have someone in your organization that's a cancer to your culture and not do something about it. That will undermine your credibility faster than anything else that you can say. I'll give you an example. One time, had a key role. It was the chief financial officer, and I did more due diligence on this particular chief financial officer than any other job hire I'd done. Mm-hmm. Five interviews of past employers, like five interviews. Wow. and detailed references and all kinds of stuff that you would normally do. And I guess it was because inherently I had a feeling that this person, you know, I liked him. I thought he was great, but there was just something about it. Anyway, long story short, hired this person and it was a disaster.
Mm.
Okay. And what I recognized is that I had to go in front of my leadership team and I had to say to them, guys, here's what I did, but ultimately I made a mistake and I did the wrong thing and I had to see that person move along.
Thank you so much, Brad, for joining us today. This has been, I didn't even
Thank
get through half my
questions. Thank you for
listening
to the Sacred Leadership Show. Charisse returns
so
Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thank
Eastern,
you for joining
10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific on the InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. Until then, continue taking small steps today to be a leader in your life for the collective.